Okay, we're going to take a look today at Leviticus 19, 19 through 22 particularly, mostly on verse 19. Basically, the Torah commands us that certain things should not be mixed. The law of forbidden mixtures is related to keeping God's commandments. Why is this so, and what is the meaning behind it? Well, that portion teaches us that there are certain boundaries about which we should not cross. In Leviticus 19, 1 through 18, Adonai gave commandments defining the proper way to serve him and to serve our fellow man. In verses 19 through 22, he states that certain things shouldn't be mixed together. These two concepts were placed in the same parasha, and therefore they must be related. Therefore, I think the lessons of these apply to the Ten Commandments. Sorry, my voice is going to go in and out. It teaches us that there are acceptable ways to serve Adonai and man, and that there are unacceptable ways to do that. We should never mix the two together. We must serve Adonai and man according to the pattern that's found in the Ten Commandments without ever mixing in other ways. Like, for example, the practices of the pagan non-believing nations. We should not mix those things into God's worship. Well, that's hard to do in our world, isn't it? Taken at its most basic level of understanding, the law of forbidden mixtures is related to separation. There's a word for you. It's about keeping certain things separate, not mixing them with other things. Do you know what Hebrew word captures the thought of separation? Kadosh, yeah. Kadosh, good. You've been listening. It means to separate or to sanctify. That's one of your piano persons. Do you see any connection between that theme and the book of Leviticus? Of course you do. The entire book of Leviticus was written to teach us one thing: how to live a kadosh or separate life. Amen? So, we can see the connection between these somewhat obscure verses and the rest of the message of the book of Leviticus. Now, where do you think this all started? Which book of the Torah? Well, let's go to Genesis 1. How about that's a good place to start, huh? In chapter 1, verse 4 and verses 14 through 19, it says, Adonai separated the light from the dark. He separated the waters above and below with a firmament. He separated the seas with dry land. And he created luminaries in the sky to separate the day and the night. Wow! It seems as though each step of creation was purposely marked by acts of separation. You may not realize it, but this connection will help you realize that the important concept of personal holiness is first taught in the creation account. So now let's read verse 19 of Leviticus 19. You shall keep my statutes. You shall not let your cattle mix with a diverse kind, and you shall not sow thy field with two kinds of seed, right? And neither shall you come upon thee a garment of two kinds of stuff mingled together. All right, now, we had a person, a family that came to our congregation a few years ago. And when they read that, they were trying to become very observant about things. And when they read that, they went home and went into their closets and threw away all their clothes. Because it says, don't mix a garment of two kinds of stuff mingled together. So they assumed that meant if your shirt is 55% polyester and 85% dacron, that you should throw it away. So they took their entire wardrobe and tossed it. It's not what it means. It means you shouldn't wear wool and cotton together, stuff like that. But They threw out their entire wardrobe. That's what I call legalism. Don't go home and do that today. Please. Steve. Tell them not to do it. In Genesis 1, after the phrase, after its kind, is used over and over with reference to created things, whether they're plant or animal. The emphasis is on the fact that, one, Adonai made each species separate and distinct, and he wanted each to remain so and produce only its kind. This connection is important because it takes us back to creation. The connection seems to emphasize the point that God is the creator, and that man dare not try to improve on what God has done by mixing species. Do we see that a lot? Sort of. I'm sure there's a whole teaching there on genetic engineering, but, you know, I'm not going to go there today. But these connections show us that the law of forbidden mixtures is a teaching on holiness or separateness. So certain things should not be mixed. So let's take this to another level now. Where in the Torah will we find the first example of a mixture of two things that should not have been mixed? Back to Genesis, chapter 3 this time, verses 1 through 7. Tell me if you see a mixture in this story. Now the serpent was more cunning than any beast of the field which the Lord had made. And he said to the woman, has God indeed said, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden? And the woman said to the serpent, we may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden, but the fruit of the tree which is in the middle of the garden, God says, you shall not eat it, nor shall you touch it, lest you die. Then the serpent said to the woman, you will not surely die, for God knows that in the day you eat of it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. So when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, that it was pleasant to the eyes, and the tree desirable to make one wise, she took of its fruit and she ate. She also gave it to her husband with her, and he ate. Then the eyes of both of them were opened, and they knew that they were naked. And they sewed fig leaves together and made themselves coverings. Yeah, in this story, truth got mixed with errors and lies. Now let me show you something. We all know that HaSatan deceived Chava. That's Eve's real name. However, do you realize that only 25% of what they said there was an error? That 75% of it was truth. Number one, the lie or the error is, you shall not surely die. But the truth is, your eyes will be opened. You will be like God, and you will know good from evil. So after initially telling a lie, HaSatan finished it with the good old truth. Yeah. What's most important is that the truth was mixed with error, and the consequences were cataclysmic, touching the lives of every person that's ever been born after that, right? The deeper teaching, the sowed mysterious level behind the law of forbidden mixtures pertains to holiness and the necessity of guarding truth from error. Surely, those of you who have begun to discover your roots have seen to the extent which our enemy has mixed error with truth. You grew up in that, didn't you? Yeah. Secondly, this account of the first forbidden mixture shows us that we should not mix error with Adonai's commandments, which are the very definition of truth. HaSatan caused Chava and Adam to mix error with his original commandment concerning the trees in the garden. Yeshua said in John 5, verse 46, and I love this verse, that Moses spoke about him. That if you want to know about Jesus, you got to read Moses. That's what he said in there. John 5, 46. And Psalm 40, verses 6 to 8 says, speaking of the Messiah, said the book is written about him. Paul said that all of the feasts were prophetic shadows of Messiah Yeshua. All of the feasts. So, I am convinced that the New Testament is just a commentary on the Tanakh, the Torah. Contrary to conventional wisdom found within Christianity, the Torah has never been done away with. People think it was abolished for various reasons, but the two main reasons they say that are because, number one, they don't know what the Torah actually says since they don't really study it at all. After all, it was done away with when Yeshua died. And two, they don't understand how to study the Bible. Analysis is a must. You got to analyze everything you read. Otherwise, you will think the New Covenant Scriptures are different from the Torah. They're not. So let me show you commandments in the Torah that are actually the basis of New Covenant Scriptures concerning the kingdom of God. And we'll stay with this law of forbidden mixtures. Deuteronomy 22, verses 9 through 11. You shall not sow thy vineyard with two kinds of seed, lest the whole fruit be forfeited, the seed which thou hast sown and the increase of the vineyard. You cannot plow with an ox and a donkey together. You shall not wear mingled stuff, and it says here, wool and linen together. Doesn't say dacron and polyester and orlon and what are the other stuffs. Note, however, it is another reference to forbidden mixtures. If someone were to sow two different types of seed in their vineyard, the fruit or harvest of the vineyard would become defiled. Therefore, the yield of this mixture could not be used. According to Jewish custom, you know what they did with the field? They burned it. Yeah, the law of forbidden mixture prohibits the mixing of two different kinds of seed. So let's read the parable of the tares in Matthew 13. Verse 24, another parable said he before them, saying, the kingdom of heaven is likened unto a man that sowed good seed in his field. But while men slept, his enemy came and sowed tares also among the wheat and went away. But when the blade sprang up and brought forth fruit, then appeared the tares also. And the servants of the household came and said unto him, sir, did you not sow good seed in the field? Whence then hath it tares? And he said unto them, an enemy has done this. And the servants say unto him, wilt thou then that we go and gather them up? But he said, no, lest happily while you gather up the tares, you root up the wheat with them. So let both grow together until the harvest. And in the time of the harvest, I will say to the reapers, gather up the tares first, and then put them in bundles to burn them, and then gather the wheat into my barn. And then in verse 36, then he left the multitudes and went into the house, and his disciples came unto him and said, explain unto us the parables of the tares of the field. And he answered and said, he that soweth the good seed is the Son of Man, and the field is the world, and the good seed, these are the sons of the kingdom, and the tares are the sons of the evil one. And the enemy that sowed them is the devil, and the harvest is the end of the world, and the reapers are angels. As therefore the tares are gathered up and burned with fire, so shall it be at the end of the world. The Son of Man shall send forth his angels, and they shall gather out of his kingdom all things that cause stumbling and them that do iniquity. And he shall cast them into the furnace of fire. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Then shall the righteous shine forth as the sun in the kingdom of their Father. He that has ears, let him hear. So how is that related to the law of forbidden mixture? Well, he links the wheat to the sons of the kingdom and the tares to the sons of Hasatan. When the enemy sowed the tares with the wheat, he created a forbidden mixture. And here he also has the law of forbidden mixtures in mind as the foundation for this parable. Wheat is often a picture of the children of light. Now we begin to see a second mysterious or soul-level teaching concerning the law of forbidden mixtures. Not only does it apply to not mixing error with God's word, it also applies to the prohibition of mixing the children of light with the children of darkness in close relationships. And you could read, let's read here, 2 Corinthians 6. 11 through 16, our mouth is open to you, O Corinthians, our heart is enlarged. You are not straitened in us, but you are straitened in your own affections. Now for recompense in like kind I speak as unto my children, but you also enlarged. Be not equally yoked with unbelievers. For what fellowship has righteousness and iniquity? What communion has light with darkness? And what concord does Christ have with Belial? What portion has a believer with an unbeliever? And what agreement has the temple of God with idols? For we are a temple. You are all temples of the living God. And God said, I will dwell in them and walk in them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. That's you. This is the temple. Where do you think the temple is nowadays? How is this verse connected to the forbidden mixtures? It tells us that we're not to have fellowship with unbelieving people, just as the law of forbidden mixtures prescribes. There's a Jewish tradition concerning a field. I told you, it gets burned if it's got some bad stuff in it, right? Yeshua stated in verse 41, where is that? I don't know. That the tares are the sons of Hasatan and will be burned at the second coming, right? And this is related to the field because it too was burned. Isn't that amazing? There's a connection that's pretty overwhelming. So this is a basis for the events associated with the second coming of our Messiah, is it not? This is a soul-level teaching, a mysterious-level teaching. According to Yeshua, the law of forbidden mixtures has just as much to do with the New Testament as it does with the Old Testament. In Matthew 5:17, Yeshua said he came to fulfill the law, right? And what do we know about that? He didn't do away with it. He came to make it full, to show us the full meaning of the law, of the Torah. Isn't that what he did in Matthew 13 with the parable of wheat and tares? Didn't he fulfill the law of forbidden mixtures by showing how it applied to his second coming? He brought out a higher spiritual meaning of the laws that we have. Truly, he gave them deeper meaning by filling up, leveling up, or cramming them with Adonai's deeper truths. Furthermore, he brought out those deeper meanings so that we could live them more fully, thus fulfilling his will in our lives. So, many people today believe there's going to be a rapture. Y'all leaving, and I'll be talking to an empty room. Because I won't be leaving because I'm Jewish, remember? Jews ain't allowed to go. And that's going to happen before the Great Tribulation, they tell you. Let me tell you up front, this is a false doctrine. Okay. Now you know where I stand on the issue. It's wrong. It's false. I would like to look at one passage used by those pre-tribbers to prove to you that believers will be raptured. Matthew 24, 40 through 41. There shall be two men in the field. One was taken and one is left. Two women shall be grinding at the mill. One is taken, one is left. Sounds like a rapture to me, huh? Most Christians apply that to the rapture. I'm going to show you a different teaching on that. I ask this question because, let's be honest, does Matthew 24 say anything about Jesus returning and appearing in the air to rapture the church out before the tribulation so they can be transformed or given new bodies to live with him forever? Didn't say that in what I just read, did it? You kind of missed that part. That's reading not the black parts of the print. That's what we call that. The context of this verse does not suggest that he's talking about a rapture or any type of deliverance of any saints, is he? The context is one in which we find him talking about the judgment of the ungodly. See verses 37 through 39. Let's read those before we get to 40 and 41. See, y'all start in the middle of a book. Well, I'll back up a little. Verse 37 says, As were the days of Noah, so shall be the coming of the Son of Man. For as in those days which were before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day that Noah entered into the, I say boat, ark. And they knew not until the flood came and took them all away. So shall be the coming of the Son of Man. So, note that he says the flood took them all away, meaning that they were taken away, killed in destruction. Verses 40 through 41 continues. It's right after 39. And he uses the same wording. One will be taken. Why would it be different? Luke also records the same utterance from Yeshua. And he gives you a little extra insight. Luke 17, 34 through 37. The disciples ask, where will those who are taken be taken? Where would you like to go, guys? Des Moines? In verse 37, those who are taken to a place of destruction, a place of carcasses, bodies, and vultures. Yuck. Note how both passages give the same meaning. People taking, and as in the days of Noah, into destruction. Clearly, the place is not with someone who wants to be raptured to. Do you want to go there? For 7 years? Wait? No, I don't want to go there. I'm glad I'm Jewish. I don't have to go. Doesn't apply to me, right? I'm sorry. The parable of the weeds and the tares. In the parable of the weeds, Yeshua also talks about the coming of the age when he returns. In Matthew 13, 40 through 43, he says they're all going to be... I already read it to you, didn't I? Note that when he comes, though, he will send forth angels to take up all the unsaved into judgment or destruction. Where does it say that? Wow. All the tares are gathered up and burned with the fire. So shall it be at the end of the world. Max is perfectly. He will first destroy the unsaved by taking them to a place they don't want to go, whereupon they will be burned. Therefore, we see that the law of forbidden mixtures actually helps us interpret events coming about the second coming of our Messiah. The connections are obvious and they're strong. Those taken are taken to be burned. The law of forbidden mixtures demands that they be burned. And so we got to look at a question of timing. Both Matthew and Luke give the timing of the taking away. It says it's after the tribulation of those days. That doesn't help a pre-tribber very much. That would be like post-trib. So even if it did refer to the rapture, which it obviously doesn't, it wouldn't occur until after the tribulation, not before. Both of these passages clearly describe an event that happens after the tribulation. In Revelation 19, verse 17, when Yeshua returns, an angel calls the birds and vultures of the earth to prepare a feast on the flesh of the people. Verse 21 states that when Yeshua returns, the remnant of evildoers, those are the tares of Matthew 13, will be killed by Yeshua and the fowl will eat their flesh. Yuck. These scriptures match perfectly with those found in Matthew 13, in Matthew 24, and Luke 17. Some say that one passage states death by burning, whereas the other states death by being fed to the birds, to which I reply, both is going to happen. Yuck. So it's a mistake to apply these to the rapture because none of them say anything about believers being raptured to meet Yeshua in the air, to be with him forever. Doesn't say that there. And two, none of them teach anything about believers being raptured to meet Yeshua in the air to be with him forever. So, there's no secret rapture of any church in these verses. So, with the knowledge that the Torah is the foundation for understanding the New Testament, we can go to the Torah and quickly learn that the phrase take away is a Hebrew idiom which means to destroy or kill something or someone. When Yeshua spoke of some people being taken away and some left, he was simply using this to say that those taken were taken for destruction. Let me give you a few verses that clearly teach this. Isaiah 57:13. When you cry, let the companies deliver thee, but the wind shall carry them all away. Vanity shall take them, but he that puts his trust in me shall possess the land and shall inherit the holy mountain. In Isaiah 57:1, the righteous perish, and no man layeth on the heart, and merciful men are taken away, none considering that the righteous is taken away from the evil to come. Isaiah 40:24, they shall not be planted, they shall not be sown, their stock shall not take root in the earth, and they shall also blow upon them, and they shall wither, and the whirlwind shall take them away as stubble. Then there's a whole bunch of other verses. I don't know if I should read them all. Isaiah 64:6. You want to write them down? Ezekiel 30:4. And 33:4. Daniel 11:12. When he take away the multitude, his heart shall be lifted up, and he shall cast down many 10,000s, but he shall not be strengthened by it. Hosea 1:6, Matthew 22:13, and finally 2 Kings 12:3, but the high places were not taken away. The people still sacrificed and burned incense in the high places. So in light of all this evidence that Matthew 24:41 and 40 corresponds to unbelieving tares being shuttled off to divine judgment, I'd prefer to be left behind. Wouldn't you like to be left behind? Well, where are you today? What do you mix in with your worship? Huh? Your lifestyle. I guess we all have that problem. We have a lifestyle outside of this room. Your customs and your traditions. Sit down for a nice Easter ham, did you? Worship a Jewish Messiah by eating pork. We were taught a lot of things about how to believe and honor God through our parents and our grandparents and our grandparents' grandparents. And this has caused much strange and forbidden mixtures. I mean, they're all over the place. And even in here, we have it. I mean, we're still trying to get it out. And it's hard. It's not easy to purge it out. But we do have to purge it out. Like we purged out the leaven at Passover. We got to get that out of our lives if we want to serve God. If we want to embody Yeshua, because he never had any of this stuff in him. He never celebrated Christmas. He never celebrated Easter. He never went to church on Sunday. He went every day, I think. He never made it to the Baptist church or the Episcopalians, or I don't know what he did, but I know what he didn't. He went to synagogue. And he said, I come only for the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And if you want to be part of the house of Israel, then you have to join us. But you have to let go of some things to do that. Because they're not going to welcome you if you bring all that stuff with you. Leave your suitcase. They charge you on the airlines anyway, so why bring one? When you get to your destination, you could always get new clothes. Clothes that don't mix together and are not 55% Dacron and 45% polyester. Wow, I got that one right, didn't I? He wants you to come to him, but he's not going to allow anything to defile his holy ground. Can you imagine God just grabbing you right now, zooming you up there, and you're standing there in front of God, and you're chewing on a BLT? What are you going to do with this sandwich? You're standing on holy ground. You can't spit it out. God is looking at you. Son, I don't want to talk to you. You can't swallow it. This is your holy temple. Why would you allow yourself to get caught in that situation? Do you know when you're going to go meet God? I know some people that just died that they didn't know they were going to meet God that soon. Don Johnson certainly didn't know on his way to the Bible study that he was going to meet God that morning. So why take the chance of ruining your eternity? There's only one way to meet God. Did Nadab and Abihu meet God the correct way? No, they walked in there with some strange fire. What happened to them? Toast. Toast. BLTs have toast around them. You could really become toast if you're standing there in front of God chewing on that sandwich. Man, that is the last thing on earth I would want to be doing when I meet God. I pray for you. Kadosh, separate yourself. Kadosh, separate yourself. Kadosh, we say that three times, which means you better listen to God when he says it more than once. Kadosh, 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 Adonai Tzevaot, Melokal Haaretz, who was and who is to come. God has not gone anywhere. We have strayed away. But he wants you to come back to him. But he wants you to come back to him on his terms, not your terms. You don't dictate nothing. Don't you want a BLT? Amen? I'm done.